that the Giants have been playing catch-up all night long. And the possible tying runs are on base now. There's a high drive to right. Is it fair? Down the line. It is a grand slam into the water. Can you believe it? And they all score, including the man who hit the ball. Incredibly, the Giants have come from 7-0 behind, and Yastrzemski has put them ahead.
Little Vandy connection working there last night in the Giants 9-8 victory over the D-backs. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick and Chase McCabe with you. Final hour here on this Wednesday afternoon. And we are now joined by the catcher of the first place San Francisco Giants. Kurt Casale is on the line with us. Of course, we always enjoy our chats with him. And
He had a good view of that shot last night. He was at first base.
Certainly did. And Kurt, I said as we wrapped up the last hour, if you'd have told me before the season began to make a bet on you guys being in first in the middle of June, I'd have lost a lot of money because I would have not made that correct bet, and I would have been wrong. And so I'm glad I didn't make that bet. Congratulations, and by the way, you guys are playing right now. And how's this season been going? Thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you guys again. Well, I'm glad you didn't bet against us. That would have been pretty crappy for you, so I'm happy that your wallet is still full. The season's been going pretty good, obviously. I mean, it's always fun to, you know, to be on a winning club and to be winning on, you know, at a pace that we're doing it at right now. It's been, it's been, you know, kind of the time of my life right now. I mean, getting to play in a beautiful city like San Francisco and, you know, and getting to be on the same team as one of my, you know, best friends from college and Yaz playing in the big leagues. You know, you don't get to do that very often. So I'm just enjoying every second of it.
You had the pinch hit walk last night. So you had the view from the base pads.
Loaded up the bases. Set the table.
It was funny because I knew I was coming up for the pitcher. I can't remember exactly when, but and Yaz was going to be behind me, and Yaz for whatever reason was like sitting in the stairwell, like kind of taking the place of like in the hole. So he literally thought he was in the hole, and he wasn't. He was like one behind me. So like I literally, you know, went to go on deck because it was my turn, and he started to walk out on deck, and I literally had to like grab him from behind and be like, "Not yet, dude. Like, not yet." And so I basically passed him and went on deck, and you know, somehow worked a walk. Like, I just, I can't believe the guy walked me to get to Yaz. It was just like that just. Like, come on, guy. Like,
well, the one strike that he threw wasn't even a strike, so it should have been a four-pitch walk.
Just like, yeah, well, that's a different story for another time because that the umpiring is being interesting this year. it was incredible. It really was. I mean, I was very happy to get the walk. It just kind of felt like it was trending towards a big moment. I remember talking to on the bench earlier in the game. I think it was in the second inning, and we're down 7-0, and Buster Posey came over and sat next to me, and we kind of looked at each other, and I said to him, "Is like, man, like it's not going to be easy, but we're going to win this game. Like somehow we're going to come back and win this thing." And he looked at me and he was like, "I think you're right, man."
Wow,
it's just kind of funny how like believing in little things like that can you know turn the tide, and then you know for me to get to be on first base to you know see that moment happen for Mike was pretty spectacular. I mean, I've been dreaming about playing in front of you know a crowd like that, and it still even wasn't a capacity crowd. But you know, jogging around the bases in front of him, you know, I couldn't hear myself think, and it just it was pretty special for me, and I can't imagine what it was like for him.
That ballpark is absolutely gorgeous. It's
it's
mind blowing. As a baseball fan, I tell you what, the strangest thing for me was just the weather. I went there in July in a July day game mm-hmm. against the Cardinals, and we were there with another couple from Nashville. We had separate tickets, not far from each other, but we were in the sun, Kurt. This is in early July. They were several rows behind us, probably 10 to 12 rows behind us in the shade, and were freezing.
Yeah, it's nuts, right? It's just there's so many different microclimates around here, and you know, especially with like some of the golf courses around here, just like you just don't know what you're gonna get. And oddly enough, I mean, I haven't been here that long, so I'm just going based on what I've heard. I think like September and October are the hottest months of the year here. Wow. Just like kind of wrap your head around that. Doesn't make any sense.
That is crazy. You brought up Buster Posey. You've been in the league for a while. You've played with a lot of special players. You've been around a lot of special players. You've seen, you know, tricks of the trade. But what have you learned being around a guy like Buster Posey?
A lot. It's really fun. The way that guy goes about his business is really admirable. He works really, really hard. He's learned a lot. We've kind of bonded over the fact that we both have had hip surgeries. So we kind of like roll our eyes at each other every day, just like, because it just doesn't feel good all the time. I think the thing that I'm kind of remembering that Buster has reminded me is, like, winning is contagious. And, you know, I haven't really felt this type of vibe since my days at Vandy. And it's like winning, you practice winning in every aspect of the game. And it's the first time that there's been, like, some similarities between the big leagues and college. So that's been super fun. And, you know, Buster's a great guy to learn from. But, like, in terms of, like, hitting tricks and you know, calling a game, like we talk a lot. I mean, I'm just open ears at all hours of the day, and I'm very fortunate to have a locker right next to him as well. It's you know, not every day you get to play with a no doubt future Hall of Famer.
Yep.
and a catcher who has won every award you could possibly think to win. Yeah. It's pretty special.
Well, I know we're gonna get into the Vandy stuff here in just a moment, but I do want to ask you, because one of the things that we've always enjoyed about our conversations with you is we can hit you with so many subjects and you just give such great answers because you've got firsthand knowledge being in the game. You know, seeing the way hitters approach today's game, it's frustrating. I know that people say, you know, chicks dig the long ball and home runs are great, and that is awesome, but just to see basically home run or bust, and this has been going on for a good while, I get it, but to see, you know, how hitters approach today's game and how maybe you've had to change even in your career, maybe this is something you and Buster have talked about, is, you know, maybe you have to take a different approach because of that. How much has it affected what you have to do behind the plate, knowing today's mentality is, one, they don't give a crap about striking out, and that means they also don't give a crap about just putting it in play with two strikes. Has that changed for you over the years on how you have to call a game?
Like how I have to call a game, for sure. I think that we practice, we call it getting your A swing off. So if that makes sense, it's like you practice getting the absolute most out of every time you swing a bat. It should be with the maximum intent that you possibly can get, and that's not always how it's been in the past. You know, whether it's, you know, two strikes, you know, choking up, or, you know, widening out, like little old school things like that, and there's still some really good hitters who do that, but the way that it's kind of been coached to us and you know, basically laid out for us from a front office standpoint, is that they'd rather basically hedge their bets on us taking our best swing every time, and that the odds or the average amount of times that it works out is going to be more valuable than if you were to constantly keep tinkering your swing and trying to put the ball in play. So, like, does that make sense? I don't know if I'm describing that well enough, but so calling a game in that aspect is it's almost easier in a sense because you know most of these guys are trying to get their best hack off, and almost all of them have a certain area where they get their best swing off. So it's I try to call pitches basically, obviously it's like who's on the mound definitely dictates how we do it and if they have the ability to throw it there. But I like throwing a lot of stuff right around where their nitro zone is, and hopefully have it break out of the zone at the last second. So I want them to think that they're getting something good that they love and that they think they can really do some damage on, and then it just misses their barrel. But it's ever changing. It's an evolving skill, and fortunately, recently we've been really good at having success from the pitching side against really good offenses.
I still don't think I ever had a nitro zone, so you wouldn't have to worry too much about me up there. Kirk Casale is with us. He is a catcher for the San Francisco Giants in first place right now in the NL West, and he played on the very first Vanderbilt team that Tim Corbin took to Omaha back in 2011. Sonny Gray on the team, Mike Yastrzemski, you heard the grand slam he hit last night into the bay. Tony Kemp on that team, a lot of really, really good players. And if I remember, Kurt, it was a three-way tie, three super teams from the SEC, and they all made it to Omaha. And you guys lost in the final four to Florida, and then Florida loses to the other team in the final, South Carolina. But all three of you guys probably were good enough to win it. But take us back, just the first moment you realize you're going to Omaha and you're taking a team there, you're going with a team that's never been there before. That was pretty special.
Yeah. It's a feeling that I remember very well because, for me, we got to go for the first time my senior year. So basically it was 4 years of, exhausting work and a lot of fun, kind of coming to a point, and we had realized a lot of our goals in that very moment. So, it was a progression. I mean, it was my freshman year kind of having a disappointing regional against Arizona State. Then the next year started the Louisville rivalry where we, just missed the ticket to the Supers. The next year we went on a safety squeeze against Louisville to go play Florida State in the Super Regionals, which was huge learning experience. And, we almost made it then, and it just didn't seem like we were quite ready. But the next year when I was a senior, and that when we had a class of, 12, 13 guys drafted, it's like we kind of knew we were going. Like we knew what it took to get there, and we were going to do everything we possibly could. And, we got a national seed, won a super, or got a super regional at home. And, I can remember, catching that final pitch from Will Kleinert in 2011 against Oregon State and just kind of losing it, just because it was just something that you dream of. Like, how many people get to go to the College World Series? Like, it just doesn't happen that often. And, to go, be one of the final eight teams to, get to play on ESPN and, open up the new ballpark in Omaha. It was a realization of a lot of hard work for myself, and, getting to do it with, 30 of your best friends is something that you can't really ever replicate. There's a time in my life, I still remember it like it was yesterday. It was super cool. I'm so glad they're going back, and hope they get to defend the national title again this year.
You guys played in the very first game of the park that they play in now. They had made the change from Rosenblatt Stadium, and we talked to some people earlier in the week who had an experience there. But what that first game you're playing North Carolina, and it's a pretty scenic park, right? It's got that sort of circular feeling to it, and the whole town gets into it. Just tell us about the atmosphere there, because I think there's probably some people listening. They might be going out there for the first time to experience it.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was the first time playing in front of that many people. I think the capacity is somewhere around 24,000 to 30,000 people. And I remember Sonny was pitching, and I can't remember who was pitching for North Carolina, but it's like every year, it seems like the people from Omaha kind of pick their favorite team that they want to win, and then just kind of ride them the whole time. And it felt like, because it was our first time out there, like the fans picked us. So there was a lot of support from us. And, I remember one of the coolest things about it. So like LSU always has like a really great fan, road fan, numbers. So like,
no question.
LSU didn't make the tournament, but I guess a lot of fans still go. And, his name's Chris. I can't remember his last name, but he was, when we played LSU earlier, he's the guy leading the chants, go Tigers, like things like that. And literally Chris shows up in Omaha with a slew of LSU fans, and they're rooting for us. They're making cheers for us, for Vanderbilt, because they wanted us to win. Like, just like little things like that don't get reported. And it's just like the fact that, so many people go there and make it special for, the players is just at the time of our life. They have parties in the hotel before we go, see us off parties before we get in the bus. And, it's really, really special. And I'm really excited for those guys to get to experience it again. And, hopefully play some entertaining baseball, but just enjoy it and just appreciate where they're at, because it just doesn't come around very often.
Of course, you stayed involved with the program. You're one of those guys that comes back, trains in the area before you go off to spring training. You have a brother that I think has been up close to as a manager with it. So what have you seen? What do you think is different? How has it evolved since the time you were there? As they, I think it's fair to say the expectation level is probably even a little higher than it was when you were there, even though the expectations were high then.
100%, and as it should be. When you reach the mountaintop and you've won it all, it's hard to maintain that same level of care. And there's a reason that these teams keep going back and keep winning, and it's number four. He's one of the most special human beings I've ever met in my life. Without him, that ship doesn't go. He finds ways of adapting to whatever team he has at that particular moment. And, he just knows how to get the best out of his players and more importantly, he knows how to set everybody up for the next stage in their life, whether that's baseball or something else. And most of the time it's something else. And, he's the reason for all of it. He's the reason that, we have all these team bonding exercises, and he's the reason I know a lot of things about former teammates that I would never have known about before. And that's why, we can pick up the phone after 5 years of not talking and pick up like it was yesterday and just not even really skip a beat. But, he's an impressive guy. And he's created something that, he's got to be so proud of. And, hopefully the whole, community of Nashville is proud of him too, and gets to experience Omaha again, fully loaded again.
We're talking to Kirk Casale, catcher for the San Francisco Giants. And just building off of what you just said about Corbs, I think the part that impresses me the most is you've seen since he's been there in the early 2000s, just the evolution of not only the game, but the kid, that, how kids are brought up, how they're wired, that, it's different from even when you were there, and how he's been able to adapt and evolve with that and continue to put out such a great product.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm not going to sit here and be able to tell you everything about that, the current team right now, because, the schedule has not allowed me to see.
You're a little busy.
I'm a little busy. I'm very fortunate to still be playing, but you know, he's got whatever it is. You know, you talk about like can't miss prospects or, you know, things that you just know. Like, and when you sit down and talk to that guy, or you see him coach, and you see him talk with his, you know, players and their parents and things like that. It just is the greatest. You know, he's the common denominator in all these great teams, but he definitely has an eye for who he recruits, and you know, he's got a certain type of player that he likes, and I think it's cool that it keeps evolving. I think it's awesome that, you know, he gets players from all throughout the country. It's not just a Nashville, you know, Tennessee thing, and you know, the way that, you know, our college is put together, he is able to put together unique scholarship packages for players that maybe wouldn't normally get a chance to go to a school like Vanderbilt. And, you know, it's just really, really cool to see. And, you know, I just see the joy in a lot of those guys' faces, you know, when they put on the black and gold, and I can remember what it felt like. And it's, you know, it makes me proud to see him still doing well today.
Kurt, we started this off talking about, you know, the hitters in today's game and in baseball, but a lot's been made lately about pitchers and, you know, foreign substances and trying to get that advantage. And advantage is always going to be something that everyone's going to try and get, but there's a line. And baseball has felt that a line has been crossed, and now, even though this is a rule that's been in place, they're cracking down on it. So what are your thoughts on that as a guy that works with pitchers on a daily basis with your position of baseball cracking down on this?
As a hitter, I'm really happy about it. I think it's been, you know, this is something that's been going on for a long time, but I think that, you know, over the past 2 to 3 years, pitchers have been able to kind of get their mix down to a science, if that makes sense. So like they have numbers to back it up, you know, they'll load up with, you know, whatever substance they have, and then they'll measure it on, you know, a device like a Rapsodo or something like that. So they can actually see, you know, if it
what's
was
working,
on,
what's not, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like they get what is going to work, what is going to defy gravity in some ways. It's been really tough to hit. I mean, take it from me personally. Like, it's, you know, when the balls are doing things that, you know, are kind of physically impossible, that's when, you know, we've got a problem. When, you know, the averages are at an all-time low, or I'm sure strikeouts are way up again, and the average velocity, I'm sure, is way up too. But I guarantee you, mark my words, Monday when this all comes to a halt and they start checking, you'll see the average RPMs probably come down by, you know, 150 to 200, and you will see the average velocity come down by probably a full mile an hour. And it's just purely because that they're going to have to, you can't put everything into each throw, because you have to grip it a little bit harder. You have to, you know, the thing with this spider tack and these substances is you can grip the ball so loosely that you can create even more whip and even more extension with your hand, that last second flick of the hand down to create more backspin on the baseball. You can't do that if you have to grip it harder because you don't have stick to grip it with. So pitchers are going to have to dial it back, and they're going to have to remember what it was like to pitch. And, you know, a lot of guys are not happy about it because it's going to be hard. I think that and I wish they did it in the off season, so, you know, there's not a risk of pitchers getting hurt, or, you know, whatever Glasnow was saying yesterday. That might be true, honestly, but it's going to be. I can't wait personally, because I'm just so tired of seeing it. Just it's just so hard. Hitting is hard enough as it is, but when you're throwing, you know, pitches that, you know, defy gravity, it's tough. But you know, I actually think that our pitching staff is set up really, really well for this change. We really don't have guys that do it. And that's the God's honest truth. There's a lot of teams out there. You're going to see some interesting stuff over the next month, I can promise you.
We're all privately hoping it's not the teams that we're rooting for. right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, let's crack down on this problem. Wait a minute. What about my team?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for any Giants fans out there, I can tell you that there's not a lot of that going on our team, so we should be pretty set up.
Kurt, before we let you go, on Fridays we do a segment called You Just Made the List, and when you're mad at somebody, you can put them on the list. And I wanted to give you the opportunity, if you wanted to put one Willie Donick on the list for not leaving tickets for you at will call like he was supposed to for a Preds game one time. You have that opportunity if you'd like to do that now.
I think I was on the list, at least for the first period of that game.
All right, sure. All right, sure. I'll put Willie on the list for this time. But you know, it's a short list because Willie, you've hooked me up with more things than I can count, and the relationships that you've helped me build with some of even the Preds players and you know, the people of that front office. I mean, I'm a huge hockey nerd, as you guys know, but I'll put you on just because they forced me to, Willie, but you can come off in like 5 minutes.
It was funny though. I left him some tickets, and you know, I was like, okay, they'll be at will call, and then in the second period, it just dawned on me. I never left the tickets. This is back when you actually still had the paper tickets. I never put them at the window, and I all of a sudden I frantically am texting Kurt. I'm thinking he's at Rippey's or something. You know, not in the arena. And he's like, oh no, I talked my way in. I told him what was supposed to happen. Nobody ever texted me or anything to say, hey, we got this guy named Kurt here. He says he left tickets. Kurt figured it out by himself, but I was worried that I just ruined my relationship with Kurt. And I was like, did you get in? He's like, oh, yeah, I'm watching the game. I'm here. But the
I'm
tickets
good,
were not
available. Your name still carries a lot of weight in Bridgestone. So even though you forgot the ticket, I name dropped you, and it worked anyways. So
okay.
Kind of in a roundabout way, you got me in anyways. So I appreciate it.
Nice. All right.
Good stuff as always. Kurt, thanks for doing this. We always enjoy talking to you. Keep up the success in San Francisco, and we'll check in later down the road.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care. Thank you.
All right, that is Kurt Casale, San Francisco Giants catcher. And, yeah, they are in first place in that division that spent a whole lot of money. By the way, they beat Arizona last night. Arizona's lost, I think I saw it right, 21 straight road games. I think that's right.
Yeah, Arizona, the Diamondbacks, not very good.
They are on the struggle bus. Same thing with Colorado.
Very good. We'll be back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next, but I think somebody's got a word about something. I think Chase, you're going to talk about some bets. Is that
right? I am going to talk about some bets. BetMGM, I've told you about them quite a bit, but you can bet on more than the final score with the one game parlay at BetMGM. So listen up. One game parlay is an exciting feature designed to help you make the selections within a single game from over 400 bet types, including team and player props. Log into your BetMGM account and create the parlay of your dreams before the game starts. One game parlay is the fast and easy way to make your same game win total and prop picks. If you're new to BetMGM, sign up today and make your first bet risk-free up to $600. All you have to do is use the bonus code 1025GAME. You can make one game parlay bets on the Stanley Cup playoffs, baseball, and your favorite soccer leagues. Go ahead and take your favorite player to score, the home team to cover, and the over and goals. Log in today or download the BetMGM app to try one game parlay. New customer offer, paid in free bets. You must be 21 years or older. Must be in Tennessee. Visit BetMGM.com for a full list of terms and conditions. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
Don't forget Father's Day is on Sunday. Don't forget the dads. And us at ESPN 102.5, the game is saluting frontline fathers. Submit a written description. Fathers who are serving on the front lines, including military, hospital workers, firefighters, or police. This week we will air those submissions via call-ins, text messages, our website, and social media. Visit the Game Nashville now for more information. Go to the Game Nashville right now for more information. Good stuff. And, boy, we've had some really good reactions this week to players that played on Vanderbilt in Tennessee the last time or when they were in Omaha. That would be for the Tennessee case. J.P. Aaron Sebia and James Atkins have joined us this week. You just heard Kurt Casale. And looking at the DraftKings odds, Vanderbilt is the favorite to win the College World Series, followed by Tennessee, and they are on the opposite sides of the bracket. And wouldn't it be something, this market, if Tennessee and Vanderbilt were playing for a national championship in baseball? Wow. I mean, wow. If you would have said that any time in the last 10 years, I mean, people would fall out of their chair, because not because of the Vanderbilt side of things, but because where Tony Vitello has Tennessee. And, yeah, that pressure is real for Vanderbilt. Kirk Casale was talking about it. I mean, they have pressure every year because they are widely viewed as, not if not the best, we view them as the best in this market, one of the best in the country, year after year after year. So you think about, if your marker is getting to Omaha every single year, that's eight teams in the country that get to go to Omaha, and that's a pretty high standard. But, hey, Tim Corbin has created that. And, by the way, they just left a little while ago.
Yep.
To leave for Omaha. So
I saw the scoreboard lit up with good luck.
Yep.
So, I mean, they are, no pun intended here, but they really have become the gold standard. I mean, that's just what Tim has built there. And yes, you're going to have, you know, other blue bloods that have been around for a while, but I think it's safe to say that Vanderbilt is one of those now, and they're recognized nationwide as such.
There's no doubt. And if you look at, we went over this yesterday, the teams that made it this year, a lot of them have been there a bunch of times, which does bring up something that I think gets brought up pretty much every year that I think would be great for the game, and that would be to push the season back. You know, especially if we're going to these new frontiers in college football where, you know, the whole thing about, well, you need December off, you got to let the kids rest, and you got to let them do exams and all that stuff, that's all gone out the window. And with the basic idea that summer school is a thing for so many athletes anyway, it's just part of the routine, you graduate quicker, you don't have as much of a class workload during the regular school year, why not push the baseball season back a month? If not a little longer, maybe 6 weeks, but give a portion of the country that really fights weather for way too high a percentage of the season, give them a chance to enjoy it a little more. I think attendance would be so great across the country for college baseball, the benefit you would have. I don't see there's any reason not to do it at this point, especially when you see what can be done in some of these great venues that are going on right now. But let's be completely honest. You see where the teams come from every year. ACC, Pac-12, SEC takes up a huge, huge percentage of the teams in Omaha every year. And the Big 12 would be up next. But the Big 12, you know, other than the Texas teams who don't have any weather issues, you know, it's just hard. If you play above where we are, right, and situated in Nashville, if you're north of that, you're going to struggle in recruiting. It's just a fact. You can't do anything about it unless you play in a dome.
So you're saying start in, like, March?
No, I'm saying start, well, I think at the earliest, late March.
Late March.
Instead of the very beginning of March or the end. They're playing at the end of February a lot of years. I think you should start, you know, if I were the magical, wave the magic wand, I would say right after the Final Four, or maybe the weekend of the Final Four, somewhere in there, right when the Major League Baseball season starts. Start it then.
I don't think it'd have a problem with that.
End it July 4th or the middle of July instead of the middle of June.
Could you imagine, like, the College World Series final is July 4th weekend? That'd be awesome.
I think it would be great. You know, it's great as it is now. That's sure. Not the problem. The problem is not when you get the spotlight on Omaha. It's a great spectacle, and there's a great spotlight on college baseball. But I think you would take it to another level if you had, say, the Big Ten and teams in the Northeast and teams in the northern parts of the Pac-12 and the Big 12. Just have the ability to tell a recruit, yeah, you're not going to be playing in the snow and the freezing weather for the first 6 weeks of the season, on and off. You know, some years are better than others, but you just know it's out there. So a lot of the best players from up north migrate to the programs down south. Vanderbilt's been a huge beneficiary. Every team in the SEC benefits from that, right? ACC teams, it's all across the country. And, of course, the players who grow up in in the warmer states have an advantage in their development. But if you look at the College World Series, you oftentimes see a lot of the same schools from the same leagues getting there, right? Would you guys be for that?
Yeah, of course. But
When's the last time you've seen a big, you know, it's rare that a Big Ten team makes it. It was pretty special that Michigan made it a couple
I'd
years
say,
ago.
Well, yeah, but why did they, what happened? What changed? I mean, it's really more about the mindset and the philosophy and the right hire. I mean, where did that guy come from again?
He was a Tim Corbin guy.
Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, he's with Tim Corbin for how long?
Long time.
Oh, yeah, long time. Maybe all of a sudden Michigan got good. I mean, the weather didn't change in Michigan. I mean, just make better hires and get a better philosophy. I mean, we've heard this before from the Big Ten. Their philosophy and how they recruit players, right? What I've been saying, like, you guys aren't fast enough. You can't keep up with the SEC. And they just had a certain mindset. And it takes people to change that mindset. Look, I've lived up there. I'm just going to be real honest with you. It doesn't – like, I'm fine with what you're saying, but it doesn't magically get any warmer. Like, you could still get snow in April and even May, into May. I mean, it's still going to be really, really cold up there. But you're going to get snow in March.
There's no question.
There's no question.
And the first month of the season is played in March. In college baseball, you have to admit, it's a handicap.
It's going to be no matter what. Like, there is no solution unless they literally play the sport in a different time of year. That's the only way you could pull it off.
But that's what I'm saying.
You would have a chance.
I think you would help. You would have more fans. You would have more balance throughout the country. You'd have more interest in the game. I think it would be a smart move for college baseball, but it doesn't really ever seem to get a lot of momentum. I know the teams up north feel that way, but they don't carry enough weight, I guess, or clout to get it done.
I don't know what the care factor is up there. I mean, there's so
well, there's none right
there's
now because
so
you freeze your tail off
heavy.
When you're going to a game. Why would you sit there and it's just not the same? But you could build it. You could build it. It would take time. It wouldn't happen the first year.
So you're saying if they build it, they will come?
Well, okay, but let's take here too in the places that already have great fan bases. Can you imagine the increase in the SEC would set records with attendance because they're not paying as much attention until basketball is over in a lot of cases, and if the weather was warmer at the start, I think you would have huge crowds for every game.
Sure. I mean, I know that's one thing that's deterred me for, like, when the season starts, you know, it's February, and it's cold and rainy and just don't want to go sit at the
Hawk. You'll follow the game, but you're less likely to sit there for nine innings. You'll say, I'll kind of wait till it gets warmer. It's natural.
For sure. There's a lot of struggles in college baseball, and that is one of them. But I mean, it's really about winning. If you build a winning program, they'll find a way to support you. I mean, that's just what it is. I understand it's way more difficult up north. Is it fair? No. I mean, it was a huge story when Indiana made it several years ago, wasn't it? Like the first Big Ten school in like decades.
Yeah,
to get to Omaha. I mean, it was
the numbers don't lie.
Yeah,
numbers.
It's the
teams,
difficult.
Honestly, teams like East Carolina and Coastal Carolina and teams from the non-Power Fives have a better chance of making it than teams from Power Fives up north.
I guess what I don't know, but I have a suspicion, you're trying to – I'm not sure there's very many fan bases around the country that have kind of the same, you know, feel and love for passion for college baseball than what you get in the SEC. I'm not sure it changes.
The SEC will always be dominant. I don't think you're going to change that. What I think you would see, though, is you would see more interest nationwide collectively, and you would definitely build more interest in.
Like if Michigan State became a powerhouse baseball program, I don't know. I don't know what that does for them.
For who?
If they would all of a sudden,
for Michigan
State, just sell out every game and they just can't get enough of it because I don't know if there is the same love and passion for baseball around the country that
I think you
get
would build
here.
It. If you had a winner, I think you would have a following.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We will come back. We've got an announcement to make on the other side, but right now I'm going to talk to you about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, the board certified physician, his wife Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff would love to help you out, love to help you get healthier and happier, would love to improve your quality of life. They've done that with me, and that's why I call them my friends. They've been around in this market since 2007, and I'm certainly not the only person they've been helping. They've been helping a lot of you for a good while, and they house a lot of things under one roof. It's a state-of-the-art facility over there in Cool Springs at 1642 Westgate Circle. If you don't believe me, go check it out for yourself, and maybe you've tacked on some unwanted pounds lately, and you would like to deal with some weight loss management. Well, they can help you in that. They've got programs and products and people that can get you back on the right track. Rejuvenation, your appearance is important. I hope so. It's important to me. And it gets tougher as we get older. You can sit down and discuss with their team, PRP, hair removal, Botox. They do that. And hormone therapy. Maybe you haven't been feeling yourself a little bit off lately. Don't have the same drive or energy or been dealing with some mood swings. You're like, what the heck is going on? Well, get your levels checked. That could affect those categories for sure. But they could also talk to you about BHRT, testosterone, estrogen. They do it all. If you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation, pick up the phone and dial this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can always learn everything about them by going to their website, coolspringsmd.com. Almost. We're not there just yet. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, and we're excited to announce something you need to check out on Monday nights on 94.9. Yeah, pretty cool. NSC Backstage, a new show that will start this upcoming Monday during the 7 o'clock hour, and it's going to be hosted by Tony Husband and our next guest, Jamie Watson, is on the line with us, a one-hour show, of course, talking about Nashville SC. It debuts this upcoming Monday on 94.9. You should check it out, and Jamie now joins us. Jamie, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to chat with you about NSC Backstage. This is a project that's been in the works for some time, and to get to finally share the good news, it's so exciting.
Well, you said you've been working on this for a good while. What can people expect with this show on Monday nights?
Yeah, there's been a lot of hard work behind the scenes to get this going, both from Nashville Soccer Club and from ESPN. We're both mutually excited to do this joint venture together. I think what's most exciting about NSC Backstage is you're going to get a chance to hear weekly from different players on Nashville SC. And we are going to talk about the games. We are going to be able to ask them questions, and the familiarity that myself and my host as well for the show, Tony Husband, the familiarity we have with the players, I think is going to be on display, because we'll be able to talk to them about games. We'll be able to dive a little bit deeper in depth in certain moments. But also, the differentiating factor of this show is we're going to be able to talk about these players off the field. And, you know, I love to think that everybody has a story to tell, and we're going to get to turn some pages on the story and dive a little bit deeper, get to know these players even more so off the field, who they are in this community, what they're about, what's important to them. And we're also going to get to hear from other soccer guests throughout the soccer world, maybe upcoming opponents, maybe hear about them, maybe some other people that have some big things going on around the soccer world. So this is going to be an in-depth, this is going to be a personal, it's going to be a raw show, and we are so excited to launch this coming Monday, 7 o'clock, 94.9. It will be appointment radio listening.
And your first special guest will be the captain?
Captain Dax McCarty. This is a wonderful human being that I've had the pleasure of knowing for a very long time. He is somebody that I got a chance to play collegiately with at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Somebody that I've known throughout my playing days, but somebody, more importantly, that has been the forefront for Nashville SC. Where's the captain armband week in and week out for this club? So what has he made of the start of the season? What has he made of, you know, the last 18 months of the MLS tenure for Nashville SC? Where does he see things going as far as the stadium on the horizon, how the rest of the season plays out? But then also, how is he and his wife and his wonderful little son, Callum, adapting to living in Nashville? Everything and more across all the spectrum, on the field and off the field, we're going to dive into that on Monday night. So make sure you're listening at 7 o'clock. Tony Husband, I cannot wait to bring you the first guest, the captain of the team. It doesn't get much bigger than that from a player standpoint.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Jamie Watson here with us, Nashville SC television analyst, sometimes on the radio side as well. Get a chance to work with you and Tony and Kelly and John and Wes and our whole crew. But just real quick, this team, Coming off a 2-2 draw against Atlanta, but having a break now with the international break, they'll get things going again on Friday against the New York Red Bulls. How is that a good thing to have a little time off with the way they've been playing to maybe get a little rest in there? But what are you expecting when they resume?
Yeah, Chase, great question, because obviously Nashville has gotten the first little phase of the season, 7 games in. They are one of only 2 teams in Major League Soccer, the entirety of the league, to still be undefeated as we headed into this international break. They had a thrilling come-from-behind draw in Atlanta. That was the biggest crowd in world football to see that game. No team had ever been able to come back from being down behind 2 goals to Atlanta United. They did that on the road, showed a lot of character. This team is flying high. Get a little bit of time to get some rest. We've seen some of the players play for their respective countries. Alistair Johnson, Walker Zimmerman, Brando Leao, Anibal Godoy have all played with their national team. So we've got to see them on the world stage. Now we get a chance to have this game against the New York Red Bulls. That'll be an exciting matchup. Covered to start at 6:30 for that. You'll be able to hear that on 94.9, as you mentioned, with John Freeman, who's normally in actually be West Bowling this week, and Kelly Glendening will be filling in there, and then Tony and I will be able to have that game locally on air. And so I think that this is a team that right now was starting to really gel and have been through some adversity already through the season, being behind a couple of times, coming back, fighting, and getting results. But they've also shown and asserted themselves in Major League Soccer early in the season that getting any sort of result against them is going to be difficult. So now they run into a stretch of 3 games in 8 days. They go Friday night, then they go back home Wednesday the 23rd and home Saturday the 26th against Toronto and Montreal, respectively. It's going to be tough to come back in 3 games in 8 days, but they're going to look to get off to a flying start against the Red Bulls Friday night. And so it should be an enticing encounter, and man, it's just going to get better and better. There's going to be more games at Nissan Stadium this summer, and you've got to come check it out. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't been there, you got to see it for yourself. It is one of the coolest and most fun things to do in town this summer, and there's a lot of stuff going on this summer.
Absolutely, and can't wait for the season to resume, and can't wait for NSC Backstage debuting Monday at 7. Jamie Watson, Tony Husband, and the captain, Dax McCarty, will be the first guest on ESPN 94.9. Jamie, appreciate it.
Hey, can't wait. Chase, we'll see you soon. Thank you for all that you do with the club and on games. And Willie and Darren, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it, you guys, and we'll do this again soon.
Keep up the good work.
Absolutely. He is Jamie Watson of
he does a good job.
Nashville SC. Does a tremendous job. And again, ESPN 94.9, your home for NSC Backstage and all of their games. That is going to do it for our show today. Appreciate you for joining us. We'll be back at it starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow. Stillman & Company, that's next. ESPN 102.5 The Game.